From Lower Manhattan, the center of the financial world, this is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning. I'm Jeff Greenfield, joined today by our regular contributors, Joe Nocera with the New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. The question gets more urgent by the day. Can the President and Congress cut a deal in the next month to prevent those automatic government spending cuts and tax hikes we call the fiscal cliff? But here's another question we should be asking. Suppose they do reach agreement on tax hikes for the wealthy or cutting or maybe eliminating popular tax breaks like the mortgage interest deduction. Joe Nocera, presuming we don't drive over this cliff and there is a deal, are there potential implications for future economic growth and what they do?
There sure are. On the upside, as they say, there will finally be a sense of certainty, which is what business has always wanted and what's been holding them back these past couple of years, or really even 3 or 4 years. And the idea that Democrats and Republicans can get together and actually do something will give a psychological boost, a confidence boost to business. The flip side, however, is that, you know, this grand bargain they're talking about really doesn't have much in the way of stimulus as short-term stimulus. It's all about, you know, long-term austerity and tax hikes. And there's not much doubt that when you raise people's taxes and you cut spending, you do not have it's the opposite of growth.
Well, you know, you pinpointed the important issue, which is growth. We talk a lot about taxes. We talk a lot about cutting. But the fact is, when you look back to the 90s, for example, the way we made the budgetary math work was by growing. And I think that you really do need to think about short-term, very job-focused stimulus. But I would also just say that it's important to remember that as bad as things seem in the U.S., as far as rich countries go, we're still the best place to be. And so I think that once we are over this cliff, and as Joe says, the businesses get a sense that there's some certainty that Washington is maybe working again, then I think you are going to see foreign direct investment. You've already seen the Chinese looking at a lot of acquisitions in the U.S., and I think that you're going to see more of that.
But let me put some specifics in front of you. This mortgage interest deduction, the housing market seems to be getting back on its feet. Wouldn't capping or eliminating the mortgage interest deduction put a screeching halt to that housing market growth?
Well, not if you go by what other countries do. I mean, most other countries do not have a mortgage interest deduction. And a country like Canada, for instance, has just as high a rate of home ownership as we do in the United States. The problem is that people have become so used to the mortgage interest deduction, and it's become this like core thing that the middle class believes it's entitled to, that it will have a destabilizing effect in the short term, although I do think people will eventually get over it.
Rana, I want to ask you specifically about a point you made several times on this segment, and that's consumer confidence and how much that's being counted on to drive us into a better economic place.
Yeah.
If you've got deductions cut or higher taxes, even if it's just on more affluent, doesn't that potentially have an impact, a negative one, on consumer confidence and buoyancy?
Well, I think it will have a dampening effect, and you're already seeing the Fed, which has done so much to try and drive consumer confidence up by boosting the stock market, step in and say they're going to keep the bond buying and the stimulus on the economy from their end going as long as they can to try and counter that. But ultimately, midterm to long term, the thing that is really going to underpin consumer confidence is if incomes are growing. And that's one thing. You know, the growth numbers were revised recently for GDP growth from 2 to 2.7%, but income was still flat or dropping, and that's the real concern.
Let me put one specific on the table also, and that is the suggestion by Warren Buffett. He says, look, if you're making over $1 million a year, there ought to be a minimum tax of 30%. Is that suggestion to either of you, does that come with the notion that would make any difference?
It, you know, is the a painful truth. Raising taxes on the rich will not make that big a difference in terms of how much revenue you generate. It doesn't generate that much revenue. But in terms of a fairness, sending a signal to everybody else in the country that we're all in this together, that the rich don't get benefits that the rest of us can't get, it sends a very powerful signal, and I think it's important for that reason alone.
I totally agree, and I would also say that in order to do the kind of cuts that you're going to have to do on the other side, the entitlement reform, these very painful things that are going to hit many Americans, it's important to have a sense that we're all in this together and the rich are doing their part. And all you have to do is look across to Europe and see what can happen when you try austerity and you don't have social buy-in.
There's one more specific before we look to a broader focus, and that is the idea of raising the capital gains tax. Is there a concern beyond self-interest that, in a more broad sense, that could lead to a drop in investing in companies and therefore hurting economic growth?
Well, once again, there is absolutely zero proof that that has any effect. In the Bill Clinton era, the capital gains tax was the exact same as the income tax, 28%. And, oh, gosh, he balanced the budget and everybody did fine. Now, but it's been dogma for so long, especially among Republicans, that if you don't have a lower capital gains rate, people won't invest. And yet there is zero proof that that's right.
Normally, I ask you what's on your radar for the coming week, but I want to ask a different question today. If economic growth is, in fact, the solution to what they're grappling with in Washington, in the sense it'll produce more revenues, it'll shrink the deficit, if you look beyond this debate, do any of you see a factor out there in the next couple of years that could actually make a big difference in boosting the economic growth rate of the United States? Rana?
I think we are going to make a new leap between the intersection of genetics and technology, and in particular, all the data that's being generated now. It's something called big data, part of this big data issue that you're hearing about so much. I think that that is going to create a lot of jobs, a lot of new companies, and hopefully some really amazing scientific breakthroughs.
Joe?
One word, Jeff. Energy.
Plastics. Okay.
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, we're in the midst of a natural gas boom in the United States. Green energy is coming along very nicely, and I think the combination of solar, wind, and natural gas has the potential to really boost economic growth in the United States.
Well, those stories we'll be watching over the next couple of years, but if you're interested in a shorter-term perspectives of the news of the week, we'll be watching the week's financial news at wnyc.org/business. And you can also take this program with you as a podcast available absolutely free on iTunes. I'm Jeff Greenfield. This is Money Talking from WNYC. Thanks for listening.